You're listening to Law and Justice. I'm Jane Mulcahy. It's Tuesday, the 13th of March, 2018. Yesterday, I had the pleasure of attending a really interesting interdisciplinary seminar at UCC. It was called Electronic Monitoring in Ireland, Shaping What We Do and Who We Are. And it was organised by Applied Social Studies, Criminology, Applied Psychology and School of Law. Before this symposium, I spoke with one of the speakers, Dr. Darius Whelan. He was involved in the third session to do with electronic monitoring and the workplace. And Darius chose as the topic of his presentation, monitoring of smartphones and by CCTV in the workplace.
I chose to focus on those two technologies because in the afternoon session, we're talking about workplace monitoring in general. A lot of issues have arisen as regards those two technologies in particular. For example, on the CCTV side, a lot of employers have CCTV cameras around the workplace, and issues arise about the purposes for which those cameras have been installed.
Okay. And in relation, I suppose, the smartphone usage, I find very interesting on a human level because we almost all have them now. It's kind of virtually impossible to get a phone that isn't a smartphone anymore. Is it routine, do you think, for employers to actually monitor people's usage of their smartphone at work?
I don't think it's routine as such, but it can happen by accident in that, for example, your smartphone will often be logged onto the employer's Wi-Fi. And the employer would say, well, at the least, they need to monitor the Wi-Fi network for malware.
Okay.
But in that process, they're going to be logging websites that you visit and so on. So if you were visiting an inappropriate website, for example, a gambling website or a sports website at a time when you were supposed to be working, somewhere in the cloud, there's probably a log of the sites you're visiting, and an overeager employer might notice this and might decide to take some kind of disciplinary action. And the danger is that they would take that action without having a policy in place and without having informed the employees that they possibly had the right to take such action.
Okay. And so are there currently laws in place in Ireland or on a more international level about the use of these type of monitoring processes in the workplace?
Yeah, there's a lot of case law which would say that there has to be a policy in place. On the employment law side, if you're going to discipline people, it's mainly employment law you're talking about.
Okay.
Now, there are also implications for data protection law, but let's say you're bringing an employment law case for unfair dismissal.
Okay.
The tribunals and courts have regularly said we won't allow any dismissal unless there is a policy in place.
Okay.
That's normally what they say. There are a few outlier cases which say differently, say otherwise. So from an employee's point of view, however, they do need to be careful because there may well be a policy in place and they haven't gone to the bother of reading it.
Right.
Most large employers will actually have a policy regarding internet usage and it will have been modernised in recent years to take account of smartphones. I mean, one tangible advice, for example, for employees might be if you're using your smartphone at work, maybe to turn off the employer's Wi-Fi and just use the mobile phone network.
Okay.
Yeah, if you have access to that. Unfortunately, if you're in a rural location, that mightn't work. You know?
Yeah.
But there are little things like that which can make a difference. Some employers will actually have a more blanket ban on personal usage of the internet at work, and that can be helpful.
That you're just not allowed to access your personal email or social media sites or things like that.
Like solicitors' firms would have that kind of policy. That's helpful, you know. I'm not suggesting that that should be brought in across the board, but there needs to be a discussion about how it's going to work for this particular workplace.
And so if they have such a policy, that applies even to your own smartphone. You should not be accessing...
Well, it should be addressed in the policy, ideally. Because obviously everybody takes breaks during work. So
if you're sitting in the cafeteria or whatever, you should be able to.
You should be able to, So you can see how complicated it is, even just from that brief example.
And then, Darius, so in terms of best practice, Would it be advisable when any new employee starts that if there is a policy that it's brought there to their immediate attention or that it's emailed to them and then it's up to them to read it? Or
yes, exactly. Yeah, and also ideally it should be regularly brought to their attention during the years that they are employed.
Anytime it's updated, for example.
Yeah, but even if not, because there are cases which say, for example, as regards harassment policies, that it's not enough to just notify somebody when they start. Mm. That you need to remind them on a regular basis. Mm. Employees have often said, well, you know, I got that policy when I started, but that was 10 years ago. Mm. So a tribunal might say, well, it's not reasonable to expect somebody to remember a policy that they received 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And there's also the question of the quantity of these policies. I mean, in a large organisation, there would be 20 significant policies which a person is told about when they start work. And how realistic is it for employees to engage with all of those 20 documents?
No, that makes sense.
And it's difficult to see the wood for the trees then.
Yeah.
You know? And then if you try to represent it by means of an infographic or something, you'll be accused of editing it down too much or dumbing it down too much.
Right. So you can't win. Yeah. And then, so on the CCTV end, what are you focusing on there in your talk?
Well, one interesting issue is that if there is CCTV, the purpose needs to be clarified. So, for example, sometimes cameras are just put up without any clarification as to the purpose. And so if that's the case, the Data Protection Commissioner would say that the assumption would be that the only purpose is to protect property. And so CCTV images shouldn't be used to discipline staff.
Okay.
Now, if a criminal offence occurs, obviously that's a totally different ball game.
Yeah.
But if it's just an ordinary inattention to duties or inefficiency in terms of work, then it's unlikely that the CCTV can be used from a data protection perspective, unless it's basically unlikely it can be used.
Okay.
Now, unfortunately, there's a big problem with the fact that the law tends to look at issues in a blinkered fashion.
Okay.
So if you bring an employment law case, the tribunal can only really interpret the employment laws.
Okay.
And people tend to assume, quite rightly, that if you go to a legal forum, that legal forum can interpret any law and can apply any law.
Uh-huh.
But you and I know that isn't the case. So if you're a tribunal, you only have that narrow function. So an employment tribunal can't actually decide whether data protection law has been breached.
Okay, so there's that disconnect.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
So there was a case reported in the media recently where a supermarket had used CCTV footage and had in fact used it in a situation where they had covertly monitored staff for 77 days, which is a very long time. And the tribunal relied on that CCTV footage without going into the fact that it might be a breach of data protection law.
Mm-hmm.
And so those employees, even if they did object to the use of the CCTV footage from a data protection perspective, the tribunal might say, well, that's not our job.
Okay.
And in fact, we'd be acting outside our powers, our ultra vires, as we would say in law. So the employees might have to go to a separate forum, which would be to go to the Data Protection Commissioner's office to complain about it from a data protection perspective. But meanwhile, their dismissal might be held to be fair from an employment law perspective.
Okay, So it becomes expensive and onerous for the employer or employee in that context.
Yeah, and also just in terms of fairness, I suppose, it just seems unfair that that evidence which on the face of it seems to have been illegally obtained can be used against you.
Mm-hmm. So is the essence, I suppose, of the kind of quandaries in this area around fair procedures for employees that they need to know or be on some kind of notice about?
Yeah, there's a lot of emphasis on that. Say, for example, if you look up the Data Protection Commissioner's website, that site would say it's all about notifying staff as to what the policy is, consulting staff in drafting that policy rather than just imposing it, and having notices around the building as to the purposes for which the data are being gathered. Mm. And in fact, interestingly, when I went to look up images for my talk, I was looking for images of signage regarding CCTV usage. And 99.9% of the signs simply say CCTV in operation. They don't actually say the purposes for which it has been gathered. And so,
that's very interesting.
It seems wrong. Mm. It seems in breach of the law.
Mm. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a sign that says it's being gathered for, you know, security purposes or anything else. Mm-hmm. And so do you discuss a number of cases in your talk, Darius?
Yeah, so I talked about the supermarket case in Ireland, but there was also a supermarket case in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Lopez Ribalda versus Spain. It's a recent decision in the European Court of Human Rights. And in that case, staff were being monitored covertly by video surveillance and were dismissed as a result of evidence found of theft.
Mm-hmm.
And they challenged this as a breach of Article 8 of the European Convention on Human Rights. And they succeeded. And the court said the big problem was that it was a blanket covert surveillance. It wasn't targeted at any particular individuals. It went on for quite some time. There was no notification. I mean, even if you were targeting individuals, you could actually have put some kind of notification up that that surveillance of all kinds was going to be used to tackle theft.
So to let them know there's a problem and that we're looking into it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, you know, some people will say, you know, surely you have to be able to use covert surveillance sometimes, and I would agree. But you could, as I say, notify people in a generic way, maybe even when they start, that, you know, from time to time we may need to put in covert surveillance, but it will be on a limited basis in terms of time and in terms of the number of individuals monitored. So those staff received something like €4,000 compensation each.
Okay.
So that was a tangible outcome of that case.
And how many staff were there? Was it a large staff?
Well, the number who took action was five, as far as I recall.
Right. Okay.
I suppose the main thing is that it's a precedent of which employers need to be aware. Now, some employers would say, well, that's quite cheap, you know. You do have to bear that in mind, that employers are economic actors and they will look at the cost of anything. And
whether it's worth their while. Yeah. One final question, Darius. Do you think if there is widespread monitoring, or if employees perceive that they're being monitored and not trusted, does that have an impact on their performance or on their mental well-being in the workplace? Or is there any research about this? It's a bit outside your topic.
But. Well, I mean, one thing I have come across is that there is a lot of discussion about what's called digital presenteeism, which is that because we all have email and other tools on our phones and on our iPads, there's an increasing expectation that we'll be available.
All the time.
All the time, okay. Exactly.
At weekends.
Yes.
During the snow.
Yeah. So, you know, that there's definitely research which shows that requiring employees to work long hours is obviously going to be bad for them, bad for their health in the long term. And from an economic perspective, it's going to have a negative impact for the employer because it's more expensive to deal with an employee who has health issues than a healthy employee. So in France, what they've done is introduced a right to disconnect law, which is that the employer must open negotiations with the employees about how they're going to deal with this problem of 7 days a week, 24-hour-a-day kind of availability. And so one size fits all won't necessarily work. You need to develop a policy which is suitable to the type of work you do. But for example, if it's a kind of a standard office situation, you might have a policy that nobody is permitted to send or answer emails, you know, outside of work hours.
Okay.
And that there's some kind of auto-reply mechanism.
Built in,
by
almost.
Default.
Okay,
yeah.
That's interesting, yeah.
I think that should definitely be considered. Now, you do have to be aware that some people need to be able to work in the evenings to take account of, for example, family situations during the day.
And your level of responsibility also might mean you have to pick up more emails, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. It can't just be a blanket, you know, everybody works 40 hours a week and it's always between 9 and 5. But certainly it needs to be considered. And you see, in theory, even employers are supposed to ensure that you take your rest breaks. Mm. But in practice, a lot of the time, they don't. Mm. That's fine on one level, but in the long term, it can lead to mental health issues, stress issues, and burnout.
Right.